Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we talked about Ron DeSantis's big campaign reset, and then about no labels and all the nonsense they've got going on. Here's the show. We are going to talk about the breaking story by NBC News, which got the leak from the DeSantis world about how they are ready to reboot their campaign. And then we're going to talk about no labels. Sound good?
Great topics.
Yeah, good topics. Which would you like to do first? I was going to lead with DeSantis.
Let's do DeSantis first.
Okay, so let me set the table. The story, I'll just read you the lead to it. Expect fewer big speeches and more handshaking in diners and churches. There will be more of a national focus than constant Florida references, and the mainstream media may start to get more access. In short, DeSantis will be running as an insurgent candidate rather than as an incumbent governor. This is from the NBC report. There's a lot more in it. The reason I would like to talk about this is because I just want to dunk on them, but because this is deeply concerning to anybody who wants Ron DeSantis to be a viable alternative to Trump in the primary, which I think both of us would like. Mm-hmm. And not because we like Ron DeSantis. But
to be clear, we would like somebody else to be the viable alternative.
If Mike Pence was a viable alternative to Trump or Asa Hutchinson, it'd be great, right? But the point is, if you're looking for viable alternatives, I think this is a sign that DeSantis is in very deep trouble. And in a way, I think it's helpful because if it turns out that he's going to blow up, the sooner he blows up, the better. Because this way, maybe it does give space to Mike Pence, who, again, is the hero we need,
okay,
not the hero we deserve.
Okay, would you stop with the Pence stuff? Pence is not this. This is terrible. You're doing this to troll me with the Pence stuff.
You know what? I am, in fact, writing a story for somebody else, not the Bulwark, about mm-hmm. Pence, and I agreed to do it purely to troll you.
It alarms me how much of your content is designed specifically
just for you
to make me nuts.
Don't you enjoy the specialness of having a writer of national political prominence who's writing content just for you on almost a daily basis?
It is funny how I will like go catch up on your triads like days and days later, and I will see that you have name checked me in them as like specifically Sarah's wrong about, and like I haven't even, it's gone right by me.
Anyway, I think it would be helpful if DeSantis is not capable of beating Trump, then the sooner Republican voters know that, the better. Because in a good world, that would give them time to go and coalesce around somebody else. Now, in the world we actually live in, what it probably means is that they go to Trump sooner. But, you know, we can't.
So, I think that's probably right, that like one of the things I've talked about a lot throughout this is like how much Trump is people's number two choice. Like if people go off DeSantis, they don't really go to Nikki Haley. They don't really go to Mike Pence. They might go to Vivek. I will say though, like a DeSantis implosion that is like a real clear implosion, it does have a bunch of dynamics. Just even before we get into like the specifics of DeSantis's implosion, I think it's worth thinking about if he's not the obvious number two, like it allows somebody else to be tested in the national spotlight at a time when like there is still time. Like one of the things like, so Tim Scott, let's just say that Tim Scott is somebody that I hate the least. Okay. I still object to, but like in my list of how I object to him, he's one of the lesser ones. Whenever I see him, like there's a couple of appearances he's done. He did one on The View where he was pretty good. I was like, oh, he sounds great. You know, he sounds like he could tell a good optimistic story. There's a bunch of other times when I see him and I'm like, you're terrible at this. You don't have a position on abortion. Did you not think you were going to get asked about abortion? Why are you talking about baking regulations? You were just asked about abortion. But I think the question is does Nikki get a chance to be sort of like, you know, there was this thing that happened, not in 2016, in the election before.
2012, where, with everybody.
Yeah, Michelle Bach. Everybody got a shot. You know, 999.
Everybody popped to number one for 2 weeks.
That's right. Yeah. And, like, it'd be nice to get a little bit of that to see if there's anybody else who could stick. I'm not super optimistic about that, but DeSantis remaining at a low number two is the worst case scenario, because then everybody just keeps fighting to get to number two, which means they're beating up on DeSantis, which means DeSantis is constantly being pulled down by the constant attacks. And so, like, either everybody's got to get out and give DeSantis the opportunity to do sort of a one-on-one, or DeSantis has to implode and somebody else has to, like, other people have to be able to take a shot in the national spotlight to get some momentum. And
why couldn't everybody else get out and give Tim Scott a shot, right? I mean,
or
you
that.
Could see, yeah, you could yeah, see one of those things.
They won't do that until there's some measure of viability. Yeah. DeSantis is the only one who has the remotest measure of viability.
I agree. And the other thing is, DeSantis floating back down to earth, so we have a muddle at number two, does free people up to, if they choose to, attack
Trump
instead of going after DeSantis.
Exactly.
And again, The optimistic scenario we're painting is unlikely. The more likely scenario is people just coalesce around Trump sooner. But we believe that's going to happen anyway. And so if there's a 10% chance that another thing happens instead, then I'd be happy to roll the dice there.
Yeah.
So that's why we're talking about this, because this is this document is basically like a pre-mortem of a campaign that. So here is a quote from DeSantis campaign manager Jenera Peck. Ron DeSantis has never been the favorite or the darling of the establishment, and he has won because of it every time. No one this race has been under fire more and won than Governor DeSantis. He's ready to prove them wrong again. Buckle up! That's an actual couple responses.
DeSantis' team sucks.
Ron DeSantis is absolutely the darling of the establishment. There's a reason Jeb Bush has endorsed Ron DeSantis and not Donald Trump. I believe as much fire as Governor DeSantis has been under, Donald Trump has been under more. He's indicted in criminal proceedings, two of them so far. And as for winning every time, I mean, Donald Trump won the presidency and Ron DeSantis didn't. Donald Trump has won two presidential nominations. Ron DeSantis won his first gubernatorial nomination literally because Trump endorsed him. I mean, this is all of which is to say that if this is the story that they think telling publicly will help them with Republican voters, then they're incompetent.
Yeah. So here's the thing about this story. So it's important to note, like, why the shakeup is happening. So the thing, what came out when their financial information came out, it became clear that DeSantis is, a few things are going on. One, they are spending at a really high rate. And so their burn rate is too much. Like, they're actually, despite being one of the highest fundraisers, because their burn rate's so high, they're actually in a cash crunch. They've had to lay off a bunch of people. So they laid off like 12 people, which when you start layoffs anywhere, a company, a campaign, it's a morale killer, especially when you do it in part because you're like, A, we're not budging in the polls, but also we're now in a cash crunch. One of the things contributing to the cash crunch is that they clearly rounded up their most enthusiastic donors early. And so their big supporters have already all maxed out. And so that only works. So it's fine if you're all your sort of first tier donors max out, as long as you demonstrate momentum. So a bunch of new donors move in and are willing to max out, but their contributions have slowed down, right? Because the perception of him is that he is not as viable as people thought. And those things are compounding because people think you're less viable, so you raise less money. You raise less money, people think you're less viable. Like, that thing is a spiral, a death spiral. And so there was a bunch in that story where the other thing that they said they were going to do is they were going to reboot their messaging.
Yeah.
But I thought, and I, this is great. So there's like a, it's like a headline, like, reboot to the messaging. And I was like, ooh, I wonder if he's going to stop talking about, you know, groomers in schools and instead talk about, you know, nope, that's not what it is. It's just that he's going to talk about Florida less and national stuff more.
Yes. And an us against the world message. That's their quote.
Is that new? Is that new? Is that a reboot?
Here's another
oh, he's going to whine more?
All DeSantis needs, this is Peck, the campaign manager again. All DeSantis needs to drive news and win this primary is a mic and a crowd. That's, if that's their view, because they're like, he's going to do more VFW halls and pizza ranches and fewer big speeches. Have they not seen their candidate with people? that is literally not his strong point. And the truth is, what DeSantis needs to drive the news is the power of the governorship. Like, that is the way DeSantis was driving news was by taking executive actions and hurting people in Florida that Republican base voters wanted to see hurt. And where has his lethargy in the polls started? It is once he stopped doing that stuff and was doing like legislating, which, you know, like the Disney fight was good for him. The migrants, you know, the refugees being sent to Martha's Vineyard was good for him. The trans stuff and yelling at high school kids and college kids about masks, that was good for him.
In a limited way, right? In that it got him on Fox News to talk to audiences about who he was yelling at today. Yeah.
Right. This idea that, like, you know, his real strength is just, you know, talking to voters, five people at a time. Again, if that's their plan, then that's a terrible plan.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was reading in Puck last night around DeSantis World is one of the things that people say about their campaign, about DeSantis and Casey in particular, is that they're extremely paranoid about outsiders. And there's like a fair number of political families who are like this, right? People who feel like they got done dirty by leaks or whatever, they become paranoid. They basically will only rely on a very close-held group of people. But that also leads to insular thinking. It creates an inability to scale when you want to go outside of Florida and you need a national campaign. Like, you and it's like, so they're very anti-consultant, which I understand, right? Like, the political
consultant. If these are the consultants they're seeing, then I'd be anti-consultant too.
Yeah, but like, you know, like the consultancy is a whole industry and like, you know, they don't want to pay them, you know, like whatever. They've got their resistance to it. And that's, some of that could be fair, except when you're running a national campaign. Like, if you're going to run for president, you need a gajillion people who are running your state level stuff, who are, you know, you need a new war room. You got to rely on new people. And it's like, as a good executive, you got to bring in good people. And so they're unwilling to do that, which I think is leading them to sort of hunker down instead of expand and amplify. But I agree with you, this idea that, you know, what's funny about the smaller venues and the smaller events is also being cost driven.
Yeah. They make that point. They're like, we can do an event for only $940.
That's right.
Jeez.
Which is a tough, now you're in like a penny pinching mode of like, well, we've got to ration our appearances based on cost, which is also a terrible place to be when Trump can still fill stadiums.
Yeah. Or towns, as we talked about in the next level, right? I mean, if you're penny pinching at the level of vote, like physically getting the candidate in front of voters, that's bad, right? Yeah. That's really bad. One more thing. Final quote from a source familiar with the campaign's thinking. The elites have already picked their candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. But the American people want a fighter who is not a creature of Washington and isn't afraid to stand up and take our country back. I don't know what mouth-breathing moron thinks that this is a message that can be sold to Republican primary voters, but it's insane. That Donald Trump is the candidate of the elites who isn't a fighter, but Ron does. Like, again, I'm not dunking on them just because I enjoy dunking on these people. But if they would like to hire me, I could tell them how to run a better campaign, which is that all those things Donald Trump says are great. but he didn't do them. And we need somebody who's going to really go to the mattresses and not worry about padding the his bottom line of the Trump International Hotel, and who's actually going to build the wall and put sharks with freaking lasers on their head in the Rio Grande River to kill as many migrant children as possible. That's what he needs to do. Right. Go from the super hard. And, you know, and look, I'm going to, you know, the president's done a lot of shady stuff, but I will pardon him on day one, because I'm not going to let those hippie communist BLM people win. I don't care. I don't care if Donald Trump broke a couple laws. That's what we sent him there to do. But I'm going to come in and, you know, if I had been president in 2020, you can believe me that that stolen election would have been overturned.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is just run as the like authoritarian plus. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. I think it probably won't work, but it's got a better chance of working than trying to convince Cletus that Donald Trump is the candidate of the elites.
Yeah. Well, I've got good news for Ron DeSantis, which is that Trump's going to be indicted imminently again. And so your campaign reshuffle woes will be out of the news. However, Donald Trump's going to raise a gajillion dollars over being indicted again, and will probably get a polling bump, which is when DeSantis, during his reboot, will probably drop to third place.
Why not, if you're Ron DeSantis, simply have as your response to this stuff, you know, when Jake Tapper asks you, you know, about the indictments, why not just go full YOLO? And say,
dude's a criminal. He's terrible, you know what? At this.
I bet he did do it, but I don't care. I'd pardon him anyway, because I'm not going to let those namby-pamby socialists in the Department of Justice get a win. Why not just say that? Because you know what? That would be gold.
I mean, I don't want to encourage these guys to say things that is actually like, I mean, that's more insane. He's already saying insane things. Like already, he is already pre-defending Donald Trump on this indictment. And that's why when like they say campaign shakeup and reboot, I was like, oh, what will they do to change strategy? Will they stop defending the president every time he gets indicted and become his little beta? Like, you know, like, no, that's not what they're going to do. They're going to keep doing that stuff. So,
okay. Topic number two. No labels.
So I texted you earlier to be like, have we done this yet? Like, I know we've talked about no labels a little bit, but I don't know that we've like gone deep on it.
I don't think we have. And if we have, I don't think this is the type of thing you can only do once, because this is a real threat. And I don't think it's going away. It feels more real every day. And with guys like Lieberman and Manchin and Sinema lurking out there, and Larry Hogan doing his tease, and you know so much more about this world than I do. I cannot understand the psychology of any of the people in this space, except on the theory that they're dirty tricksters who are really in it to help Trump. I can understand that, right? If at heart what they want to do is, like, they're running a, like, sub rosa, like, you know, the truth is Biden's really bad, and, you know, Trump's good for business, and we can, you know, that I could understand. But this, like, hey, look at this. Here's our map with the states we can win. We can do this. This is the time. Joe Biden is an unacceptable. But, yeah, Charlie's newsletter yesterday about the Supreme Court illegitimacy arguments coming. And, you know, Charlie's like, here's Joe Biden, the one guy who is, you know, behaving reasonably and upholding norms on all this stuff. And I was like, yes, that's right. And No Labels thinks that Joe Biden is too unacceptable somehow. I don't understand. What are they thinking, Sarah?
So I don't know what they're thinking exactly, because I don't really know, but I want to, Let's take an uncharitable version and do that, and then let's take a charitable version. So I think the uncharitable version is the one you just kind of got at, which is that actually this is a Trojan horse for reelecting Trump, and that's what they plan to do, right? They plan to get on the ballot. They know that ultimately they'll hurt Joe Biden, and this allows people with clean hands to argue, listen, this is just about giving people more choice. This is about, you know, look, these two, you know, extreme candidates, America, look at the polls. The polls show you that, you know, Americans are not happy with these choices, which Americans are chronically unhappy with their choices. And so this is the opportunity, you know, this is the opportunity, but they know that it'll reelect Trump. Actually, that's, I'm getting into actually a slightly more charitable version. The uncharitable version is actually, yeah, Trojan horse for reelecting Trump. I don't think it's definitely that.
Which would be bad for Joe Manchin, I think.
It would be bad for Joe Manchin, right, once he's on the other side of it.
If Joe Manchin wants to run for his Senate seat again, it's much better for him to have Joe Biden in office to run against than to have Trump in office running against, helping the MAGA candidate against him, right? Because then Manchin doesn't have a Biden Democrat to triangulate against and butch himself up against.
Well, that assumes he's running for Senate and not on this unity ticket.
Oh, right. Yes.
Right. Because I think the Manchin Hogan or the Manchin Huntsman deal, or Huntsman Manchin. I don't know who would be at the top of this
Manchin
ticket.
Cinema.
Yeah, whatever. But who's at the top of the ticket would matter somewhat. But let's leave aside the ideas. But like, here's the thing. So here's where I want to explore the charitable case.
That's right? What I want, because I don't understand that.
Right. So the uncharitable case, Trojan horse. The charitable case is a little bit of, sorry, what I was just saying before about the Americans deserve more choices. Like in my world, the democracy world, there's a lot of reformers, right? A lot of political reformers who talk about things like ranked choice voting or fusion voting. And sort of at the heart of that is the idea that the two-party duopoly is terrible for America. Americans deserve more choices. You know, the argument for ranked choice voting really is one of, if we had ranked choice voting, we could have more political parties and more opportunities for coalitions, a more European style government, right? And let's break up the two-party system. I would say that a lot of people, and so like, okay, fine on its merits. I know you're sort of a ranked choice voting person. Some of my best friends are big ranked choice voting people.
I am agnostic on ranked choice voting.
Okay.
People talk about it like it's the end all be all, and I'm agnostic.
So sort of, regardless of the utility, like the actual whether or not it would be good or bad, let's assume it would be good. Just the practical reality is that you can only pass it in places where, like Maine, Alaska, where there's a lot of there's tons of political independence and a
it's
huge
not
appetite
work in Oklahoma.
You are not going to get this nationally.
And you might
you're
be able to
not.
Get it. You might be able to get it in blue states, honestly, but you're not going to get it in red states, right? I could see New York or California going to like, because it fits with the like, you know, goo-goo democracy reform types in liberalism, right?
Right. And so, but without, so if you don't have things like ranked choice voting, right? Then sorry, the reality is that third parties, unless they have this chance of winning, a genuine chance of winning, otherwise they are pulling in their 20% from some combination of both parties, right? They are, and so the question is, who do they pull the most from? And I think No Labels understands that, like, a Joe Manchin run, the idea that it would siphon off, this is the problem for Trump. Trump's committed vote, people who want Trump proactively, is like 40% of the country, like, or, you know, it's like the yeah. always tr- like, or of Republicans, it would be Trump would still get 85% of the Republican vote.
Yes.
And Biden probably get like 75% of the Democratic vote. Cause there's a lot of soft Biden voters, a lot of soft Dems in there. A lot of hardcore
and a lot of
Trump
conservative
support.
Dems in places like Pennsylvania Dems. And
that's
Wisconsin.
Right.
And if you give them a more conservative alternative, right?
Yeah.
They might go there.
And so I understand why you want to offer more choice, but here's the thing that's really happening, which is there is not a huge appetite among voters for this sort of fiscally conservative, socially moderate. Like, I love it. And this is the thing. I am the no labels target voter. So I'm sympathetic on some level to this idea. And look, if it was Bernie versus Trump, I think, like, and they really came up with a dynamic candidate. What, like, I could, it is this idea. And but here's what's driving it. Sorry, this is the thesis. It took me a while to get here. It's donors. It's the money. So donors to efforts like No Labels are socially moderate and fiscally conservative, right? And they want to live in a world with candidates who are socially moderate and fiscally conservative. They don't want high taxes. They want less regulation. They want, right? I'm supportive of this. Like, I am not a billionaire, but I'm still support. Like, there, when you're a billionaire, right? You got the good end of the stick, and you like the story of American capitalism, right? Because it's your story. Great.
Look at that. Anybody can be a billionaire. Hey,
listen, I love that story too. I love the stories of American capitalism. That being said, the idea.
Look at this, like, guy. He started out with just $100 million from his father, and he turned it into a billion. What a great country America is!
Yeah, right. So I'm not going to argue this part specifically with you, but I'm going to argue is that, like,
I just want to troll you. Go ahead.
The people that class of billionaires, like, they want to believe what No Labels is selling. No Labels is telling them these two candidates are deeply unpopular. This is the moment for a third party. And these guys, you know, they listen to Larry Hogan, just like I do, and Joe May, and they get the warm fuzzies because they're talking like, because they sound normal. Like, let me tell you, I would just say, whoever the No Labels, if it was like a Manchin Huntsman ticket or a Hogan Manchin ticket, is a normie ticket. I'm probably for them as like general people, like, would prefer them and prefer their policies. It ignores all political reality, though. And the biggest part of the problem is that what they will do is they will generate, this is the worst thing, is that right now, going into this election, depending on where the economy is, there's going to be a lot of what we're going to talk a lot about double doubters, okay? People who don't want to vote for Trump and don't want to vote for Biden. And if No Labels gets ballot access, and even if they don't field candidates, right? So let's say they start out fielding candidates, they realize their ceiling is 12%, 15%, whatever, 20%. They're going to reelect Trump. They can see that in all of the polling, whatever, which is obvious to everybody else right now, but let's say it becomes obvious to them. They don't do it, but they're there on the ballot. And people just have protest votes and they just start throwing away. And 4%, and they vote down ballot, which actually they vote down, but instead they go. And like this happens, right, with third parties. This was the margin in the blue wall states of people who went third party.
And these are the ticket splitters, right? These are the people who otherwise would vote Biden and then vote Republican down ballot, which is why the down ballot Republicans have performed better when Trump was on the ballot, because there are a lot of people, both in 2016 and 2020, who couldn't make themselves vote for Trump. Not a lot. I mean, not like 10%, but there was a small percentage of people, and those people were decisive in the swing states.
Yes, that's right. And also, it's like you can see, right? These are people who would be like, "Ooh, Mike Bloomberg is getting in." Like, they want one of their own.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Right. Like, they'll like, who's a banking CEO that would be great? Like, who's a great business person? We want that person. That's fine. That's not a person that is going to win over a majority of Americans, many of whom, like, I was talking about this on the next level about, like, the parties are in some ways quite weak, right? They're weak enough that they can be hijacked by Trump or like insurgent forces. But they're strong in the sense that people have a lot of party ID and loyalty. And so, like, they just start out so far ahead that the idea that you could just, like, run up the middle on a guy like Joe Biden, is wrong. They're telling themselves, and they just talk to each other. It's like a lot of billionaires, and it's the no labels people giving them wish fulfillment. Wish fulfillment. They're saying it can happen. It could happen. And because these people, because the donors, whatever, they look at Biden and they think this guy's too old. Kamala Harris is bad. You know, these guys can't win. They view themselves, right? They're entrepreneurs. They take risks. They believe in so there's a bunch of ways in which they are hardwired to want to believe that this is true. And there's a group who is willing to sell it to them.
So let me give you a political science-y explanation of this stuff, and you tell me if it scans correctly or not. In the question of party weakness, I would submit to you that the Republican Party is much weaker, and in the sense of being capable of taking over by an outsider, than the Democratic Party, because of the nature of its coalition, because it is so homogenous, and the party is really driven by a single demographic, which is white men who are Christians. That made it easier for an outsider who could hit very well with them to take over the party. The expansive and diverse coalition that makes up the Democratic Party makes it harder for an outsider to come in and take it over, because there are just too many, you know, you have white working class voters, you have African Americans, you have liberals, you have suburban professionals. It's just too many different, the coalition is too broad for one person who way over indexes on one of them to come in and just own the whole party. That's political science part number one. Political science part number two is that a third party candidacy becomes viable in a world in which both parties have been hijacked by outsiders. And I think that this is true of the Republican Party. Now, after 7 years of Trump, I think Trump is no longer an outsider. Trump now is the Republican Party. The Republican Party is Trump. But let's pretend in 2016, Bernie had beaten Hillary. And Bernie was an outsider candidate. He was not really a Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. Bernie taking over the Democratic Party would have been, again, don't get mad at me and yell at me, but as a political science matter, would have been roughly the same thing as Donald Trump coming in, taking over the Republican Party. In that kind of world, a third party suddenly maybe is viable because your committed partisans don't really have a place to go. I mean, they could stay with their party, but they understand that the person who's running their party now isn't really one of them. The problem with the no labels or third party bid now is that Joe Biden is the dead set center of the Democratic Party. Like, that's just where he lives and where he has always lived, is right in the middle of the Democratic Party. So does that all make sense from a political science perspective about, like, the nature of the party coalitions and having candidates who are centered within the party versus candidates who are outsiders? Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.